It's Bonus Pod 262.
You approach the bluebell field. You've been walking through the forest for quite a while now, 45 minutes, an hour. You can't quite remember, but you were promised in Ramblers Monthly, the magazine that you subscribe to that's about rambling in the British countryside, that this was a great undiscovered spot for bluebell spotting and bluebell sniffing, but not bluebell picking. Leave only footprints and take only memories, photos, whatever it is. And after much walking and much scraping past brambles and negotiating banks of mud and root, you finally come across this magical expanse of beautiful bluebells. They go on far and wide. As far as the eye can see, you gasp. You've never seen so many bluebells in your life. They're wonderful. And you start to frolic amongst them. Yay! At last, bluebells. Enough bluebells for me at last. And all for me. All for me. No one else here. No one else here to spoil the enjoyment of the bluebells. No one else yammering or talking to distract me or to... And you say out loud, "They're all mine!" And then you hear, "No, they're not." "What?" And from another direction, "They're not all yours, mate." "What?" And then in another direction, "We can all hear you, you know." "What?" And you look down and you see that the bluebells are all like pointing up at you. Like the hollow bits all pointing up at you. And you lean in really close to one and it says, "You're not alone. You're never alone with bluebells." And another bluebell opens its flower up real big. Real big, getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And you go, "What the heck, man? This is not what I signed up for. This is not the bluebells I know." And the bluebell just grabs you and swallows you whole and sends you tumbling down a green esophagus. Green esophagus. Ah! You're scraping against the xylem of this bluebell stem, falling, sliding, until, oof, you land in the belly of the big bluebell. The belly of the big bluebell. And, oof, you land there, and you're trying to get your bearings, you're scratching your head, and you look up, and there sat along with you in the belly of the big bluebell is Phil and Pierre. And Phil's all scraped up. Pierre's hair's all tussled. He's got grazes along his arms, similar to yours. And he just pinches his forehead and pinches the bridge of his nose and looks up at you and he says, "You thought you were alone too, huh?" And Phil goes, "With the bluebells?" And Pierre goes, "Ugh, don't even talk to me about it." Well, welcome to Bonus Pod.
That's good.
You like that?
I liked the sort of... timeless timeless sort of God, what's the word I'm looking for here, like the
quality
unfixableness. You thought you were alone too. It's unresolved.
We will never figure out the bluebells,
the ennui. That's the word I wanted.
Ah, yes, a malaise, an ennui. The bluebells, they got us again, he seems to be saying. We'll never truly understand them. I was caught by surprise by how pleasant it is to say deep in the belly of the big bluebell.
Deep in the belly of the big bluebell. It's nice.
Deep in the belly of the big bluebell.
When you are feeling down, Phil, are you a Malaysian?
For a while before I knew of the word malaise, I'd hear, when I was living in the UK, I'd hear someone verbose say, "It's the Malays." And I go, "The Malays? Where?" But they weren't talking about Malay people. They're talking about a sense of exhausted sadness.
Yeah, whereas for a while you thought, God, people here really find Malay culture depressing.
The Malays has got to me again. Oh, it's the why am I so down, the Malays? I'm like, wow.
Wow. Normally, the combination of vibrant flavors and the food and interesting multicultural influences on the clothing and language brings people to It makes them happy, yeah. But you guys...
There's so many different sort of traditional dances, and the longhouses are something to behold.
Yeah.
And, I don't know if they have longhouses. They have traditional wooden houses for sure. The gamelan. The gamelan's more Indonesian, but there's a Malay gamelan. It's all... But yeah, wow, to make everyone so sad all the time.
Yeah, especially the French. Wow. the Malays. Yeah, it's funny to hear that.
Yeah, France is full of Malays. What? Really? I had no idea this. The Malay diaspora was so concentrated in France.
They never even had a colony there. That's strange that they would do that. That's not normally how it works. How are you doing, Phil? Do you have any spicy thoughts or exclusive brain content? I have hay fever.
My spicy thoughts. So my girlfriend made me watch, for her birthday, she made me watch Twilight.
Oh, no.
Which was... that was my thinking going into it. But it is kind of so bad it's good. I think enough time has passed now that it is so bad it's good. And both the lead actors have sort of matured into pretty respectable actors.
Yeah,
I'm a huge Robert Pattinson fan. I think he's superb. So it's quite fun to watch him in something quite bad that he quite clearly has a lot of contempt for, even during the filming of it.
Yeah.
But I think my hot take is that both sexes just need... They both have a thing that is shit that they need.
Okay.
There's something shit that they need, and the other sex, by and large, will never truly understand it. And I think for a generation of women, it was Twilight. And I understand that. There's something fun about it. But it doesn't really speak to me because it wasn't really... I don't know. It wasn't the movie I needed at that time in my life. For me, for boys... I mean, I'm tempted to say, oh, it's wrestling. Oh, it's violent video games. But... But Twilight is such a specific cultural moment.
And enough women that we know like wrestling and violent video games to a degree that isn't true for men and Twilight. Yeah.
But men don't have these... Am I right in saying men don't really have these sort of cultural moments in the way that women do in their popular culture?
It's probably just The Dark Knight again.
Yeah, I was just thinking, all it is just The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight is a very important film for men. But that's about it.
Fight Club? Sort of slightly, every man has to be slightly pathetically obsessed with Fight Club when they're a teenager.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I think you're right. Fight Club. Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's Fight Club. Similar. But the movie's good, isn't it? Or am I just saying that because I'm a boy?
It's a good movie, but it is like a kind of... It's a version of something that you can get obsessed with as a 14, 15-year-old boy, whereas the book is... It's based on a book that the same boys would not read.
Interesting.
So it's a bit of a paradox in that sense. What's the equivalent now? What are the young men being sort of unduly obsessed with now?
Andrew Tate.
Yeah.
That's sort of the new... What would you call it? Neo-misogyny?
Oh, like from The Matrix?
Yeah. It's sexism, but in bullet time. He's bending over backwards. it's a woman asking for a deserved raise. But he's dodging it like in The Matrix.
It's a guy who wants to avoid feminist arguments so much that he's willing to have himself sucked into a telephone.
Yeah.
Into another dimension.
Yeah.
To be fair, that is the whole red pill thing that they're obsessed with, those weirdos. Yeah, is there a thing that young men are obsessed with now that isn't harrowingly negative? I don't know. There must be.
We no longer have really shared cultural moments anymore because of the fragmenting, atomizing nature of the internet. And
Wolf of Wall Street? I don't know.
Even that is kind of old now for Gen Z men.
Yeah. But in terms of Twilight, there's for the part of Twilight's appeal to its demographic is the slight sort of horniness of it, right?
the horniness, the moodiness. Bella's characterization is, you know, real sort of me. I'm just kind of like an outcast and weirdo. But yet she's the one that the mysterious hot guy in school becomes obsessed with.
Yeah.
She's the only one he can't read. So it speaks to a certain kind of loner.
Yeah.
In the way that Fight Club would have spoken to a certain kind of loner for men, or Batman speaks to a certain kind of loner. And then the Manosphere now.
Yeah.
Jordan Peterson, Joe Rogan, all this kind of thing speaks to a certain kind of loner. So... But I think the difference is that with Twilight, the young women are affected. That time in your adolescence is kind of lonely in that way anyway, and you grow out of it. But this new loneliness, it seems more long lasting. The Manosphere loneliness, the age of internet loneliness seems more long lasting.
TikTok loneliness.
Hmm. Mm.
Yeah, I wonder what it is like. What was that fucking Scott thingy versus the world? Scott Pilgrim. That had a sort of like dork gets the kind of ultimate fucking quirky manic pixie dream girl vibe to it.
Right. But that was so self-knowing.
Yeah. But who's the manic pixie dream girl gender swap Twilight equivalent now? Isn't it? It's just
How have I missed this? Joker. It's Joker.
Yes.
Joker, that's what it is.
Yes, that's right. The giggling.
It's like, see, I'm not a loser. I'm misunderstood and actually very powerful in a scary way, like Joker.
And I'm laughing because I'm sad, actually. So how about that?
Yeah, yeah. And anyone who ends up hurt by me deserves it for having ostracized me before.
Yeah, nerd revenge.
Yeah, it's the Incels Manifesto, Joker. And there's a new one... coming out now, Joker 2. Have you seen the trailer?
It's a musical or something?
Is that it? I thought like watching it. Oh, it's a musical because there's all these kind of weird sets and...
They've said it's like La La Land.
Ugh. Anything that is a celebration of the golden age of cinema of Hollywood can fuck off.
Yeah.
I'm done.
It's just masturbating.
It can't have been that good. It wasn't that good. Have you watched movies from back then? They went on for fucking ages. They were tedious. They were so boring. They're not good. It's just some director wants to have a little wank and
they always,
build a few sets and
they always win awards. Like, they always win awards because they're the equivalent of a Peter Kay nostalgia stand-up routine for the people who run the Oscars.
Absolutely. I read a very good piece on the Atlantic. Of course I read the Atlantic. And it said that in the run-up to this year's awards, there's one golden rule to predicting who will win best film, and it's the film that isn't the best, but that makes Hollywood feel the best about itself.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're the dream weavers.
That's it.
We're the visionaries.
That's it. And his argument for Oppenheimer was maybe more tenuous than the case for, say, La La Land, which is very obvious, but the case for Oppenheimer was that it was a Christopher Nolan movie, and Christopher Nolan's was this name that tried to bring that brought cinema back after COVID with Tenet. It didn't. Tenet sucked. But this is a story that Hollywood wants to tell itself, maybe.
Yeah, and everyone has to award, like, there's all that thing of, like, they're like shadow Oscars. Like, the Oscar is nominally for a movie, but actually that's the shadow reason. That's the open reason, but the shadow reason is that we've decided to thank this person for bringing back cinema.
Yes. Yes. Or we've decided to thank this person for reminding us of old cinema. Do you remember the film The Artist? Was it a French film?
Oh,
it was all silent. It was completely silent. And it was fun, but it wasn't the best movie of the year. But Hollywood went, oh, look, it's us. That's what it is. I can see my house from here.
Yeah.
Oh, it's us. It's a selfie. Oh. Who doesn't love a selfie? Imagine if you could give an award to a selfie of you.
Oh.
That's what the Oscars is.
Yeah. I agree with that. That's a pretty good spicy take. That'll get you run out of LA.
Probably. Run out of La La Land itself. Run out of Tinseltown.
I mentioned this on the main pod, but I put an unboxing video of my... I got some uncorrected, whatever, raw proofs of the book. When you publish a book, it turns out The samples they give out are like kind of paperback, flimsy, not flimsy, but like they're not the hardback. They're not how it's actually going to be. They're sort of temporary versions.
They kind of look like they're saying, kill me. They don't look entirely natural, the proof copies.
It's like a version of a book that's saying to you, should I be born? Should I? In fact, I'm looking at Sidesplitter, the copy I got of that. I've got it there. I can see it. And that leads me onto my question to you, Phil. Do you relate to the following? Because when I opened up the box and I saw it's tangible, it's real, the thing I spent all that time on, I was filled with a terrible Dr. Frankenstein-style fear.
Yeah.
Where I looked at it and I thought, oh no, they did it.
Yeah.
Oh no, they did it. They put it in a book. I know they said they were going to, but I kind of didn't believe them. And now it's all in a book.
I didn't believe them. They've actually done it. They've called my bluff.
You maniacs! You've published it! God damn you all to hell! Like Planet of the Apes.
my gut reaction was similar, but it was more to do with I opened it and went, that's a waste of paper. Oh, that's a lot of paper. Ah, fuck. I'm sorry. Shit, that's a lot of pain. That's a shame. That's a shame.
You couldn't make eye contact with
trees.
That's
how I reacted when... Yeah, I was like, oh, sorry. I didn't think they'd actually do it.
Yeah, that's it. That was my feeling. I was looking through it going, all my words are now inside a book that exists. And I almost wanted to say, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean... I'm sorry if I'd have known. Now it's real. It's too late. So, yeah.
Is that your spicy take, that you didn't mean to write a book, but they did it anyway?
I don't know. I
You were tricked into writing a book, into publishing a
maybe
book?
Maybe my spicy take is, what's wrong with us that we didn't just feel joy?
Well, I mean, it's odd to me to even suggest that an appropriate reaction to that is joy. I don't see why a reaction to that would be joy.
Look,
the thing is, once you get to a point, once you actually do the things that always seemed unreachable, you realize it's all just a transaction. I bumped into a couple of friends on the Overground home.
Yeah.
And they said they'd seen my posters on the tube and they went, that's exciting. You must be excited. And I said, no, it turns out if you pay them, they'll put anything up.
You can have that.
You can put your face up if you wanted. It's not like the tube thinks I'm good. The Underground doesn't think I'm good at comedy.
Yeah.
We just said, can we pay to have these posters? And they said, yeah, all right, if you can afford it.
Yeah, it's not like you were standing on the concourse of a tube station once, and then you looked into the dark tunnel. You're like, oh, where's the... And then you just saw a hand beckoning. A ghostly hand. And you looked around and it was late. The train wasn't going to be for a while. So you went into the tunnel. And then it was just like a kind of ghostly wraith of the trains who said,
yeah,
you are funny. We have found you worthy. And then, yeah, you unlocked having a poster.
And they just magic a poster.
It would please the tube to help you. But excitement, I agree. I would not feel excitement. But I will say, just to balance, to be a bit more positive, when I held it in my hand, I did feel like satisfied and like, oh, wow, it's tangibly happening. Great.
Exactly. And I think it, particularly in this day, because it's not like you don't produce a lot of stuff all the time, but this is the first time you can physically hold something in your hand.
Yes, yes.
A little brick of progress, a little brick of work. That's nice. It feels good.
Whereas this week was Bud Pod 262. Imagine if we had 262 scripts, hour-long scripts piled up.
Yeah. It'd be insane.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That'd be a fucking
crazy
Game of Thrones library of poo jokes and stories and stuff. You'd have to have a maester going through them.
It'd be one of those libraries so big it ends up on an Instagram reel of like, take me here.
Lock me here with a coffee and some digestives and leave me be.
Blech.
I hate those because I've been in some of those libraries and I know the kind of books that are there and they're not, you won't like them.
Those libraries are either... like, either you're not allowed in them because you want a priest or something. Or, like, they're specifically, I don't know, Frankish poetry from between the years of bloody blooded blah. And, like, if you're not a scholar, they mean nothing to you. Or they're tourist destinations. Like, for a birthday, I went to Porto once. There's this beautiful bookshop in Porto with these spiral staircases. You know, you have to buy a ticket to go in.
That's crazy.
Because, obviously, it's famous because it's beautiful.
But that's it. And I look at some of those pictures and I go, I don't know if you would like to be locked away in the library that is filled with land registry church charters from in Norman Ireland. From 1300 to 1600. I mean, maybe, but given that the rest of your Instagram is you trying to do videos of you creating custom new healthy yogurt recipes for breakfast, I don't know how good your Latin is, actually. Or just like hundreds of Victorian and therefore by now incredibly inaccurate in many ways, historical books on matters no longer of great import.
Yes, matters that have now... for all intents and purposes, been settled.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I'm skeptical of those people. So forgive me, actually. Forgive me. Forgive me for not thinking you want to look through a Book of Hours collection, which is just prayers.
What's a Book of Hours?
A Book of Hours would be a sort of leather-bound vellum book, like little handheld thing. And it would be a book of all of the... It would be prayers for the different times of day. So hence Book of Hours. So you've got matins, vespers, like morning prayers, afternoon prayers, middle of the night prayers. And people would read through their Book of Hours to help themselves go to sleep and stuff like that. And psalms and bits of the Bible and illustrations. And you get some very, very beautiful, fascinating Books of Hours that belong to some very famous people. But I don't think... that someone who does exercise videos in tight Lululemon pants with their dog is interested in that. And frankly, I don't think they have the level of insular Latin required to decipher them.
No. But maybe you can bring your own book in. Maybe that's what they're counting on. Maybe you can bring your own book in.
I can't wait to read the Da Vinci Code surrounded by all these charters. Yeah,
Da Vinci Code got me reading. Da Vinci Code was my Harry Potter. That was
I remember
Dan
you
Brown
saying
was
this.
My Harry Potter. Dan Brown got me reading. Is that okay to say?
I think that's pretty spicy in the world of nerds.
I don't think it is. It's just like you're such a big series.
Yes, but
you're
it's
such a
very.
Big writer. I read all of them. I read Digital Fortress.
Yeah.
I read Angel of Demons. I read Da Vinci Code. I read what's the other one that wasn't Digital Fortress? There's one in the ice somewhere. I can't remember that.
Oh, yeah. But what I mean is it's a very unelite, very humble thing to say.
It is. But what's illustrative is that I loved those as a teenager, then went to university and came back and he released The Lost Symbol.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't get through a single chapter. I couldn't do it. I was like...
really?
So bad. I just couldn't do it. But I said... Thank you, Dan Brown. Thank you. You got me there.
There's some...
I felt like Dan Brown is going through The Lost Symbol. He's going, well done, Phil. You don't need me anymore.
Yeah. Was it sad, like, being able to beat your first chess teacher? You go, oh, no.
Yeah, it was like that.
I've had to go back to my original dojo and kill the guy who...
exactly.
Who taught me martial arts.
Because in the interim, I'd read... better books and hell, better graphic novels.
Yeah.
I'd watched The Sopranos. I mean, that was enough to go, oh, this isn't good. You know what?
Yeah. Frank, on tour, Frank was telling me about an author, I can't remember his name, who he would write his own books, but he would buy stories from people. So he just knew that he was happy to accept. he was really bad at coming up with stories. He just couldn't, like, and he would buy not complicated stories from people, but just stories where it was like, yeah, this guy wants this, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens. Like, very, very bare bones, minimalist, you know, like 10 bullet points. And he would buy them if he liked them and write them.
And that man's name was William Shakespeare.
That was a little man who you might know as Billy Shakes, better known as William Shakespeare. There's always that bit where they go, better known as, in those stories. Well, we should do some VIPCO, better known as, yes, VIP correspondence.
Absolutely should. It's the least they deserve.
It's true. For their lovely, lovely support. It's another lovely massage from Handy Dandy Andy.
Handy Andy. Good to hear from you again, Handy Andy. Always, it's always dandy to hear from Handy Andy.
It is. It is. Dear Philharmonic and Pianissimo.
Philharmonic is the name of my first musical show that I'll never do.
Oh.
It's saved up.
Oh, yeah. Up in the attic.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll ever do a show called Pianissimo.
But it's good.
It's good, though.
Pianissimo.
I'll keep it
in
mind.
You know the name, you know the piano, the full name is the pianoforte.
Oh, yeah.
Because the whole point was that you could play it quiet, piano, or loud forte. So it's called the pianoforte. But
and so it's called the soft loud.
It's called the soft loud. Back when you could just name things what they were.
that was
the great leap forward. The harpsichord, you couldn't adjust the dynamics, how loud, because the harpsichord just plucks strings. But the piano allowed you to introduce dynamics. You could hit the notes softly or loudly.
That's such a grandma caveman name. To go from harpsichord to got put on the soft loud. Put on the soft loud and play it.
Oh, play us a beautiful song on the soft loud.
Oh, yeah. Do serenade us with the twangy box. So, dear Philharmonic and Pianissimo, these really do get harder to think of. CT's recently featured story of having a frog on them in bed. And the a listener discovered a frog in their bed. It flapped onto their head, remember?
Oh, yeah.
And the ensuing discussion of Phil's shower slugs and outside things inside.
Ugh, I hate outside things inside.
Yeah.
It's wrong right. place.
Rekindled, a harrowing story that originates from my sister-in-law. She was in Egypt on holiday and unfortunately succumbed to the Egyptian equivalent of Deli Belly.
Of course, it's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Happened on with the crew that I went out to Egypt with. Like yes. clockwork.
I'm not sure if this phenomenon has an official term, but I'll proffer the suggestions of sphinx shits or pyramid poos.
Pyramid poos. Deli Belly, Cairo-ria.
That's really good.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm
That's
glad.
Good. I was going like the Nile smile. I couldn't figure out. That's good. Cairo-ria. Poopin' Carpoon.
Yeah. Tootin' Carpoon.
Yeah. I think we're not going to get better than Cairo-ria. I always laugh remembering
the pyramids of Squeezer.
I always laugh remembering that listener who was on like a Nile cruise, and the guy was making tea, like the one of the guides on the cruise. He was like 10, and the guide was making tea, and he had some tea because he got offered some tea by the Egyptian guide, and he thought his dad was mouthing, "Drink it, it's nice," because his dad was mouthing something to him, "Drink it, it's nice." So he had some and got really sick, and his dad was mouthing, "Don't drink it," because the guy was just filling the kettle with water straight from the Nile, just over the side of the boat.
Christ, no!
So funny, mouthing, "Drink, have some, it's nice."
Also, why would you have to secretly mouth that?
Yeah,
silently?
Yeah, yeah.
if it was nice.
But is that, that's the thing people do to kids, isn't it? Where they go, have some, try some.
Oh, that's true. That's
try some
true.
Of grandma's biscuits, you know. Anyway, so accordingly, so this is the sister-in-law is on holiday in Egypt. She's got chiaria. Accordingly, she was confined to the hotel in frequent contact with the conveniences. During one such visit to the loo, she became aware of an unnerving noise from the plumbing, which was not of her own doing.
Okay.
Yep. So there's a funny noise from the pipes. A few moments later, she paid witness to a cockroach escape from the sink.
Ah.
So a cockroach bubbles out of the sinkhole.
Oh, well, from... Oh, that's horrible thing to accompany a gurgling sound.
And then another, and then another.
No! Ah, yuck. It's like the fucking Scorpion King.
Yeah. Following following this brief roll call of City Roach's Arabian cousins. Kyra Roach.
Kyra Roach. Kyra Roach.
Following the few, like one or two or three coming out of the sink, a full legion of roaches started emerging from every available orifice of the bathroom. The plug holes, the vents, even the taps.
No, this is like a horror movie. This is awful.
They also appear to be acting like incensed, running amok, and many of them keeling over dead.
Oh, what happened?
She extradited herself from the situation as quickly as possible and immediately went to hotel reception to report the terrifying disturbance.
And this is the person with diarrhea. Diarrhea.
Yeah.
Oh, the one room she needs the most.
Exactly. Rather than be met with sympathy or surprise, she instead encountered the calm retort that this was simply the scheduled fumigation of the pipes. The staff member benignly highlighted that a sign had been on display in reception to warn guests. Arguably, for a tourist spot, it would have been handy if the sign was in more than just Arabic.
That's crazy. Funny. That's funny.
I mean, can you fumigate pipes? I guess you must.
But like water pipes? Doesn't the gas just get stuck?
But also, like, how many roaches were there that you start to fumigate and you hear like, and like one bathroom? Only one of the many in the hotel has that many coming out.
I'm just trying to understand how it gets through the water and how the... I mean, like the U-bend in the toilet. Are the cockroaches like swimming through the trapped water and out the other side and climbing up?
Well, none came out of the toilet as far as we're told.
Oh, fair enough. So the U-bend works.
Yeah.
Okay. Gosh, well, yeah, fair enough. I mean, that does agree with my experiences of Egypt.
Yeah, I don't want to go there, having read that.
Yeah, it was the hottest I've ever been in my life. Amazing history, but I could imagine cockroaches bursting out of the sink at any point. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I'm out.
Yeah,
I'll drive around and through, but I don't want to stay in a cockroach hotel. Andy says, speaking of languages, you may not be aware that at one stage the adverts that played on Bud Pod were for Apple Books. I'm sure there are some creepy content detection algorithms at work, but one of the specific things advertised was a learn Japanese feature. You may be inadvertently breeding the next generation of unnerving Japanophiles, but at least it shows AI isn't quite there yet. That's funny.
Yeah, gosh,
it's true. I remember as well, like, it's quite clever. We did a whole thing talking about a correspondent told us about their Volvo exploding and there were Volvo adverts.
Really?
Yeah, although there I did put Volvo in the description of the episode, so it was probably reading the text more than anything else.
Well, Jesus, there are going to be a lot of adverts for Joker 2. We say it's like the Joker all the time.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have, folks.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for being subscribers, guys.
Yes, hope you enjoyed this week's hot takes. Hope you have some hot takes of your own. Why not?
Yeah.
And follow us both on Instagram. And order Pierre's book. Get Pierre's book.
Yes, please.
But until next time, love you lots. Bye.
Bye.